It's just one of those days when you don't want to wake up. Everything is fucked. Everybody sucks.
Hi again. This is your werewolf, and this is Werewolf the Podcast, and this is episode 27, another story from my past. This one's called Somebody Chose the Wrong Mug to Mug. It was the early 2000s in the great city of London. I was there because it seemed like the thing to do and the place to be. I walked out of the tube station in Highgate minding my own business, as everyone does in London. I love the aspect of this big city. No one communicates or has a kind word for anyone else. 100 people can surround you, yet you may as well be alone. It's amazing. I'd been to the gym and was walking up the road towards the flat. I was currently sharing a flat with a sad Nicola or something. She doted on me, so life was okay for her at the moment. It had been a good night, and I knew that I would be getting some, and some food when I got back. She was a sad, dumb person who believed what I was telling her. You know, about them being special and all that nonsense, all the stuff that the lonely want to hear. I mean, she was quite nice to look at, maybe an 8 out of 10 on a good day, but she was making long-term plans, so she would have to go pretty soon. Meeting parents was not my thing. Eating parents, as you know, was my thing. I suppose that could be a fun scenario for the first introduction. There was an awful lot of loneliness in London. Many people had come to the big city to make something good of their respective little lives. It was easy to take advantage of that loneliness. She was a PA. I think it stands for pain in the ass, for some big-time celebrity of whom I'd never heard. I found her in a cool club in London, the Fashionista or something, where the patrons wore the clothes that cost the lives of small Chinese children. You know, those brands that charge the buyers astronomical amounts of money for the privilege of causing workers to try to commit suicide to escape. And people think I'm a monster. Companies should not need suicide nets in their factories. I only murder face to face, at least, you know. The torture is sometimes short, and there's no suffering after the torture. Anyways, the point was not to talk about her. It was the story about the time some guys tried to mug me. Yeah, you heard that right. They tried to mug me. What were they thinking? I was walking along the main road and had turned into a side street to get to the back door of the flats when I noticed two young guys had been following me for a while. I'd thought nothing about it, and I just let them fall into the general background noise of London. No one attacked me, so why would I worry? They had obviously devised a cunning plan to steal my bag. One boy rushed in from behind, hitting me bodily to distract me. I think he meant to knock me over or at least put me off balance, but he just bounced off my body like a tennis ball off a wall, winding himself in the process and sitting on the floor nonplussed. During this crap distraction, the other boy tried to snatch the bag from my hand as he ran past me. This was quite amusing, as he managed to get hold of the bag and continued to run and got as far as the length of the handles. The handles then snapped tight and the boy was dragged off his feet. I'd acted like an anchor and he'd been slammed into the floor as well. I turned and laughed out loud as they got themselves together and ran away from me into a small alley. I could not believe what had just happened, and my posit was finding it hilarious as he pointed out the irony of the situation to me. Me being attacked. Me. I have to admit it was slightly embarrassing. This, though, was going to be fun. I had managed to get the pleasant experience of an unexpected hunt. I turned to my posit, smiled, and let my words enter his mind. Come on then, let's kill them. I could still hear their ragged breathing and their footfalls, although they were far away. I focused on them above the city's noise. Their scents were strong also. One smelt unusually of ripe strawberries. Not the smell of a casual thief to my mind, but as the old adage says, they could run, but they couldn't hide. Or the new adage, if a werewolf can smell you, then you are dead. They were now going to experience the law as dished out by nature. So I set off in a casual lope and chased down my prey. It was not long before I found them both breathless and in a side alley next to the tube station. They must have thought that they had lost me, that they had escaped. But sadly, it wasn't true. I turned into the alley, whistling the theme from A Few Dollars More. Probably wasted on them, but it seemed to fit the situation for me. They both turned and looked at me in utter shock. They were young and desperate, and I could smell the fear and panic ooze off them as I walked forward towards them. It was great! Oh dear, my young friends, you really chose badly this evening, I said. They both looked around the space, searching for an effective bolt hole. The only way out for them, happily, was through me. My posse found this a little bit funny and wanted to watch the show, and padded behind them and sat down to watch. Fuck off, man. Fuck you. Get away or I gotcha, said one of the boys in false bravado and what I assume was a put-on accent. I smiled and took some time rolling up my sleeves, building the tension as they got more and more stressed and perturbed. I love this shit. You need me? Asked Fenrir in my head. No, it's all fine, I replied to him out loud. Now the kids thought that I was mental as well. Fucking brilliant. The fear was building and building inside them. A delightful inner turmoil. They were desperately trying to think what to do next, and then their inexperience showed as they both went to their jackets to pull small knives. I think this would be enough of a threat typically to escape most situations, but in my case, it just made the outcome for them a lot worse. Well, worse. What am I saying? I was going to kill them anyway. You see, sometimes I talk nonsense. It could not make it worse, could it? I nodded at them as they stood inexpertly in their respective stances, brandishing the blades. I smiled and gave myself an all-over body shake and a couple of pre-fight warm-up skips on the spot. I then took an over-elaborate anime-style fighting stance of my own construction. Bruce Lee would have cried. As I flexed in my bullshit-do stance, I began to give them a little lecture about knife crime. Did you know that statistically, the person who carries the knife is more likely to be stabbed by it than the person they attack? Oh, and also, for future reference, if you survive this encounter, which is sadly unlikely, you really should not show your steel until it is buried in your victim. Oh, and if you draw a blade, you better be willing to kill with it. Are you willing to kill with it? Because on this sad day, you met me, and I am willing to kill you just for the simple pleasure of doing so. I nodded at them. I often think that I would have made a great teacher in another life, you know, like the guy in the Robin Williams film, whatever he's called. The boys were getting more and more agitated at this point, and bravely they started to step forward. One of them cleared his throat quite melodramatically and then uttered one of the most exemplary threatening sentences to ever be uttered. Fuck you, man. Fuck you, you fucking fuck. I waited patiently now, just standing regularly, my arms dangling by my sides, and ever so easy target. The bravery built. Come on then, you fucker. Come on, you're gonna have it, you cunt. You cunt. You cunt. Sorry, you don't need to hear their bad language. And then one of them lunged forward with a blade. Tut tut. He had no skill and no right to be in a knife fight. He was just awful. He was massively overreaching with his weight over his front foot and aiming the blade at my gut. His arm at full length. It was like he'd never done Carly or anything. I swatted the knife hand away with a casual backhand that hit the arm with such force that it sent the blade sailing from his grip and into the bins that were against the wall of the alley. I joyfully felt and heard his radius and ulna break and wrap in their new flexibility around my own wrist as I struck. Having broken the bones, I caught the now broken wrist in a vice-like grip and pulled him forward and off balance, slapping his face with my other hand as he fell forward towards me. The boy yelled, falling to his hands and knees, and tried to catch himself on an outstretched arm. Not good for him. Hilarious for me and my posit. His smashed bones failed to support him on impact as his arm and then himself collapsed. It was fucking hilarious. He lay on his side, screaming and holding the wobbly arm, dry retching, and in so much pain that he no longer registered what was going on around him. I stood over him, smiling. I look down at him and then at his friend as he slowly calmed down. Once calm, he kept looking at me and then at his damaged limb, desperately trying to support his ruined arm. I laughed and did a little boxing jigging footwork around him. After a few moments, he got to a seated position and just stared up at me. His eyes were wet with tears of pain and saliva and mucus ran from his nose and mouth. The whole thing had taken about half a second, one down and one to go for the wolfman. I again decided to give them some sound advice. You should have rushed me together. That would have been your best plan. It would have failed, but it was your best chance. The movies get it wrong, you know. They do that one at a time thing for the audience. In reality, you should all rush in and beat the shit out of Well. In this case, I suppose I am the wronged hero. Me, a hero. Who would have known? I monologued at them now, looking at my posit and pointing at myself. The boy still standing, holding his knife, looked confused and then dropped the blade and offered me the surrender of his open hands. Man, just leave us, man. We is not worth the trouble, innit? He said, such a butchery of our beautiful mother tongue. I am sorry, did you say innit? I asked, expressing this with a face of revulsion. You see, what you say is not actually the truth. You are worth the trouble to me. You see, as Bricktop in Snatch says, did you see Snatch? The boys shook their heads. You've not seen Snatch, brilliant film. The bit where the dog eats a squeaky toy and then for the rest of the film doesn't bark but squeaks. Hilarious, I laughed. Great bit of cinema. Anyway, I digress. As Bricktop states, I am an horrible cunt. Which means I enjoy doing horrible things to people, and you are bad people who are now going to get horrible things done to them. I tried to say the word horrible in a Cockney accent, you know, dropping the H. I hope it worked. I'm pretty good at accents at times. So here goes. I stepped forward and round kicked the legs from under the boy standing in front of me. The shin of my leg smashed into the knee joint of his right leg and folded the joint the wrong way with an audible ripping and popping sound of breaking ligaments and destroyed joint capsules. Ouchie, said my posit with a gruffling laugh. The damage to his knee would be severe and debilitating in the short term and probably require surgery if he did survive tonight. He fell to the floor, clutching at his knee and blubbered a little, lying there pathetically on the floor. He started rubbing his knee as though it would make it better. So sad. I let them have a few moments to fully grasp the situation and try to think of a way out. The busted-legged boy was struggling to get up. I knew that leg could no longer support his weight. He did not realise this, so he tried to get up and failed. He used the skip to get to standing and then placed his weight on his damaged leg. Stupid. It folded in the wrong direction and he fell again to his knees. He was not really in too much pain. Ligaments don't hurt a lot when you tear them. They've no real pain or stretch receptors in them. I think they're called Golgi bodies or something. You find them in tendons and muscles but not in... Anyway, I think he had just reacted to the shock of seeing his knee on sideways from his thigh. It was definitely in a place where it shouldn't be. He tried to stand again and failed, so he started to crawl towards the alley entrance, but he was just not able to do so he gave up. He just lay on his front, banging his little fists on the ground while yelling at the world in general. I knew he could not move very far or escape, so I could relax and now take my time. Smiling, I walked forward to the boy with the broken arm. His eyes never left mine, and he started to mumble and cry while he pathetically tried to drag himself back away from me. No, I yelled. Stay where you are. I've a very important lesson to teach you two, and it will depend on how you behave as to how horrific this lesson is going to be. Now, all I want is an apology, and we can shake hands like men and say no more of this. Is that okay with you? The boys looked at each other and then back at me and hesitantly nodded. Okay, you first, I said, pointing at the boy with the broken arm. He raised his tear-stained face towards me. I is sorry, man, he mumbled quietly. Sorry, I couldn't hear that, I yelled, looming over him like a big fuck-off loomer. What did you just say? I am really sorry, he said with some authority. Good, I smiled. Good. Now let's shake hands like gentlemen. He smiled up at me and offered me his unbroken arm. I smiled back at him and said, "No, not that one. The other one." His face fell as he looked questioningly at me, then at his friend. "But that's broken," he gasped. "Yes, yes, you are quite correct. But whose fault is that?" I asked. I just want to shake your hand, and you're being very insulting." He looked at his friend once more as though he could help him, and mewling like a baby kitten, he lifted his broken arm with his good one and offered his ridiculous-looking floppy limb to me. "Well done, that chap," I said, grabbing him heartily by the hand and giving it a good hard shake. The shake, I have to admit, was somewhat excessive. It dragged the boy forward onto his face, where he screamed for help and then for his mum. "Pathetic," I spat. "That was not a handshake of a gentleman." I threw his arm outstretched in front of him with disgust, and it bounced on the floor as, weeping and hiccuping, he tried to bring it back into his body for safekeeping. "He's a fucking maniac. Leave us alone. You can't do this to us," he gasped. "Someone will hear us soon and come and help." "Maybe," I said. "Let's all shout for help together. That might help you, huh? Come on, all together now. You ready? 1, 2, 3. Help! Help me! Help! Help me!" He was right. In the long term, though, someone would hear us soon and might make life a little more complicated. Still, I was enjoying myself, so I decided to worry about that if it actually happened. I now turned my attention to the broken knee boy. The posit was sat by him and called out to me as the boy went to his phone. "What are you gonna do?" "Phone the police?" I asked as I walked towards him, kicking the phone from his hand and stamping on his bust knee a couple of times. He cried out with each stomp, trying to get his hand and arm between me and his now very crumpled and complicated looking knee. It was funny to see him try to take the rubbery limb away. The pain I caused him must have been delightfully intense. I reached forward and grabbed him by the chin, nodding at the posit sat behind him. The posit wandered over, taking his time. I looked deep into the kid's eyes. My eyes bored into his very soul. He knew from that point that he wasn't going to be walking away from this meeting. Did you get the joke? I'd busted his legs, so he couldn't have walked away, could he? I should have been a comedian. Anyway, I will get to my point. He knew he was going to die. Is your mother the religious type?" I asked him, speaking far too close to his face. He nodded his head. "Do you believe?" I asked. He nodded his head again. "Well, if that's the case, then you'll have to realise that I am here to take your soul, to torture and hurt you, to teach you a lesson from the Dark One himself." I laughed dramatically. Shame there was no crash of thunder. The tears streamed down his little face. "You mortal fools," I said. It was a bit much, but they bought it. I started to allow the hand that gripped his chin to swell in size. The scalpel sharp claws extended from my fingers to gently cup his head, each pointed appendage gently piercing his flesh. He again opened his mouth to scream his protestations. In response, I folded his jaw with a simple flex of my hand and gripped it there. Using my other hand, I tore the tongue from his mouth, my knife-like fingers doing the slicing. Holding his head so he could not look away from my eyes, I held the tongue before him and waggled it in front of his face before popping it into my mouth. The warm flesh was a tender morsel to the taste buds, much like a rare tender steak, bloody and flavoursome. He watched me eat. His larynx was rattling with unfocused noises. His friend at this point had tried to crawl away from the threat. I reached out and grabbed his foot, dragging him back to where we played, and pushed him so he sat next to his friend. He had the most fantastic seats in the house to view the destruction of this living being. The joy now they sat together so close. I realised they were probably brothers. I was eating his brother in front of him. I could not imagine the emotional chaos that this was producing in his adrenal system, but I could smell the fecal matter that had voided in his genes. I went back to focus on the now desecrated face of the first boy. I held the skull, turned his head left and right so his eyes met his brother's, and then allowed his sibling to see the damage I had created, like fine art on a human canvas. beauty to me is in destruction, and I was a fine sculptor in this medium. Seeing his sibling defiled, the boy tried to turn away, not to look at him, but I couldn't allow that. He was here to see the process, to be part of it, to feel what I felt as I did my work. I caught his chin with my index finger of my spare hand and brought his face once more to look at his brother's, and shook my head. Do not look away again. You made a decision tonight to do something wrong. That decision has led to this. This is your fault. You're like a fox that meets the wolf, a predator of sorts, but not on my level. You feed on the small and the weak. I can take the large and the strong. This is all your own fault. His death is your fault. I cannot help what I am. I am the apex predator, not cruel intentionally. It is in my nature. You brought this on yourself. Now, suffer with him, for him. I may let you live. I may. It all depends on how fastidiously you observe the dissection of your friend, or is it your brother? If you avert your glance even one time, you will die. If you cry or retch, you will die. If you move your head, you will die. I was talking utter bollocks, but it was pretty enough speech for me. The boy's head that I held in my other hand had gone limp. He had fallen unconscious from the rough treatment. Not dead, but out. That was okay. I learned that humans were fragile, but you could inflict utter horrors on an unconscious or dead one in front of another and get some tremendous psychological responses. Okay. I've had a few watchers that have passed out during the torture process, but they're just easy to slap awake and carry right on in front of them. I made sure his brother watched now as I excised the meat from the face. The strongest muscles in the human body are actually those with which you chew. They are super strong and super rich in blood vessels. I used the tip of my finger to slice into the skin that was above the jaw. From there, I gently began to swipe my scalpel-like tip over the surface of the face here. This skinned the muscle. I had to be extra careful not to damage the outer tissue of the cheek musculature. The boy burst into sudden wakefulness in my hand. Horror was in his eyes, and then he quickly passed out again. I smiled as he flinched and appreciated my great dexterity and poise. This meant that I did not mess up my artwork. The effect that this brief moment of consciousness had on his brother was massive. His face fell into utter helplessness and he cried, "No, no, 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 no," at this abuse of his brother's body. I passed my finger now below the cheek muscle until the tip of my claw touched the bone of his skull. Then, using it carefully, I slowly and surgically sliced the meat from the bone until I had the entire muscle excised from the side of the face. I had done well, as the tissue was not too severely damaged. The blood loss was minimal, meaning the white of the bone shone through. It was such a beautiful sight, and in stark contrast to the vast array of reds of the rest of the picture. I offered the other boy the delicacy now. I was tempting him to taste his own brother. He refused and tried to push his head away from me as I moved forward towards his lips. His revulsion was so explosive that his head hit the wall behind him. He could not get himself any further away from the long pig flesh. I held it closer to his face. "Taste it. Taste it. It's good," I whispered to him. He shook his head away from the morsel and let out a weak cry. I took the meat back to his lips and became more insistent. "Eat it. Get to know your brother fully. Share in his last moments. Maybe you can imbibe his soul. Think of that. He will always be part of you. As you change his flesh into your own." That's almost poetic. The boy now was lost. He was out of control, thrashing his head around and refusing the offer. I fucking hate vegans. I slapped him a little too hard, probably discombobulating him for a moment. Then, with him looking at me now with frustrated hate, I popped the meat into my mouth and ate. The coppery taste and the consistency were the finest, and I recommend it to any of you as the best cut of meat from a human. As the horrified boy watched, I tore more strips of flesh from the face and then let the body slump to the floor. He was not dead, but it was only a matter of time before he was. The artistry I had created and the beauty of what I had done filled me with utter joy. The lower jaw was slack and broken, no tissue holding it in place now, just one set of ligaments to the right-hand side of the face. The skull was clean to the bone from the chin up to the eye sockets. Above the eyes was still perfectly human-looking. Such a distinct, clashing, living being. Sadly, I could feel the boy's body start to fail, the final shudders of his life passing. I turned back to his brother, slumped on the floor, pathetic in his impotence. Not brave enough to fight the losing battle to help his now dying brother. I would leave this one alive. This moment of artistry should be remembered and passed down as stories to those who want to be the wolf when they were actually just mice. Not so tough now, are we, blood, I said to the still living thief. I picked up the dead body of the boy by the neck and held it aloft in the sky. I raised him up as though making an offering to some ancient god. Then I threw him at his brother's feet. The body slid to a stop before him, and as if I meant it, the head snapped towards the onlooking boy. The shock of the contact with the floor accidentally brought the corpse back into the living world for a moment. The closed dead eyes flicked open and a guttural moan left the ruined throat and the mouth of the cadaver. And I cut it off with a stamp that crushed the skull and showered the other kid in bits of gore. Well, that was super smashing great, eh? I asked. The boy looked from the sticky puddle of brain material to my face. He had no hope. He had lost everything that he held dear. He was ruined mentally and emotionally. Pure artistry on my part. No one else in the art world could create emotions as strong as I could. Smiling, I crouched down, looking at the living boy as though thinking about how to start my next great masterpiece. He had gone into total shock, overloaded by this experience. What he had just seen was completely outside his own reality. I lifted his brother's hand and offered it to him as if it was a greeting to shake. He looked down at the hand and then to me, jabbering with tears, eyes tight, liquid running from his nose and mouth. He cried like he'd not done since he was a small child. He let everything go in that moment. He knew he had not long to live. The sensations and the energy he gave off were stirring and sexual. The pleasure that I got was beyond orgasmic. This was all that he had now. It was pure and unbound. He held nothing back at this moment, and I could feel everything he offered. My spine tingled with pleasure. I stood up quickly, and he flinched away with a yell. I opened my fly, and taking out my manhood, urinated on the boy on the floor. The warm stream of urine ran down his face and onto his clothes, mixing with his tears. I shook a couple of times on finishing, put it away and laughed at the cowering figure. So pathetic, man. Take this as a learning experience, one that you will never forget and one that will alter your life for the good. I will remember you and check in on you every now and again. Believe me, I can find you at will. It is one of my gifts. Today you've learnt that you have no idea what is out there. You have no idea of the ability or the evil that can be held in any stranger. Take this lesson well, my young Padawan. I smiled and turned to leave the alley. Oh, and you will not leave here for a good 10 minutes either. Not that you'd follow me. I don't think you're that fucking stupid. Okay? Okay, I repeated, the boy's reply shook in his mouth. Yes. And that's the end of the episode. Thanks for listening. If you would like to give me some money, which I'm sure you really would, because that would be really nice, there is a link down in the description, support the show. You can buy me a coffee there. For those that have already done so, love you very much. It's very nice of you. Bye.